This week on the BOAG World Show, we're joined by Emma Manning from Headscape to discuss continuous development, project management skill sets, and delegating successfully to your team. This week's show is sponsored by Resource Guru and InVision. World Show, the podcast about user experience, digital strategy, and a whole lot more. Joining me as always is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul.
I can
in
see
person.
You. Yeah. It's like the world's in 3D. It's very exciting. But we're also joined by Emma Manning. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Paul.
You're really excited to be here, aren't you?
I am.
Are you? Emma is a project manager here at Headscape, and that's where I am today in the Headscape offices. Be honest, Emma. Have you been pretty much forced to be on the show?
I was probably the most reluctant guest speaker ever.
No, because Chris Scott has been on once.
Oh, has he? I thought he'd managed to never appear.
No, he has been on, hasn't he? I'm pretty sure he has.
I may have blocked it from my memory. I don't know.
He really, really didn't want to be here. You don't either, then. So did Marcus make you? Is that what happened?
I think, to be honest,
what
I
thing to say.
Well, I think you put me on the spot, actually.
What do you mean me? How come I'm getting blamed for this? I've got no authority over you. You could have just said no.
It was when I was very, very busy and I got hauled into this office.
Right.
And so, you know, no, that was with a diversionary question, I have to say, and I was hoodwinked into going, yeah, all right. It was fine.
Marcus that dragged you in. I was just having a conversation about Marcus, whether Emma might like to. Next thing I know, he drags you in. You weren't given any choice. So, Marcus, you're the baddie.
You'll love it, Emma.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Well, what I'm thinking is that if I do it now, then I haven't got to do it again for a very, very long... Whatever.
Well,
what?
You're already one of the best guests we've ever had, so you'll be back again in 10 shots.
Yeah, yeah. It's like washing up.
Do
right?
it badly.
Do it badly, and nobody will ask you to do it again.
Yeah, brilliant.
So just be really shit for the rest of the show. So, Emma, when did we start working together? When did you join Town Pages?
Oh, 2000,
was
I think, or 1999 or 2000.
God, that's so long ago.
The reason I remember that is because my daughter was born in the year 2000.
Right.
And that was when I was at Town Pages.
Town Pages.
Yeah. So nobody knows what Town Pages is.
Yeah, go on. You explain what Town Pages is.
So that Town Pages was a fantastic company.
A brilliant cutting edge.
Yes. .com. We all work for, as did Lee, who is often on the show.
Yeah.
Often on the first episode, but not this time. No. He's feeling a little bit bitter.
No, because he's shit.
Is this the first show? Because I can quickly fix that.
It's not the first show.
No, we're on the fourth. And, of course, Pete, who was on last week.
Pete was on last week. And, yep. And Chris, basically...
it's incestuous, isn't it?
We all met at this company called Town Pages that was... So this is kind of late 90s.
It's a .com.
.com company. Mm. The kind of reasoning behind it, its mission, if you like, was to kind of...
I'm interested to see whether you could explain this.
Well, it was kind of like a portal, information portal, wasn't it? Either for sort of UK-wide via the internet or local via kiosks in shopping centres and stuff like that.
Because people didn't have the internet at home as much, did
Nothing
they?
Nothing like it. I know it sounds weird, doesn't it?
I know.
Kiosks. Yes,
yeah.
They're great, aren't they?
Well, it was a terrible idea at the time, to be frank.
Anyway, it's where we all met up. There were a really good design team there. The kind of basis behind the business was somewhat flawed, and it ended up dying. But we kind of all met there and learned how not to run a business.
Yeah, it was one of those kinds of, you know, almost like a wartime experience. You know that
it brought us together.
It brought us together through trauma and heartache. I mean, some of it was crazy. Do you remember that? So there was all kinds of weird things that went on, and the one that always sticks in my mind the most was the people behind the company. It became almost like an incubator, didn't it, for other random ideas, like the pet cemetery website.
Yeah, there was some
great
odd ones.
But then Somehow we ended up in a situation where the managing director had committed to producing 15 websites.
Over a weekend! Yeah, that's right.
So we all ended up working over a weekend to produce 15. Were you there when we did that?
Yeah, I was.
That was crazy.
But wasn't one of his other businesses, didn't he own Robin Reliance?
Did he?
Yeah. He did. He owned Robin Reliance, and I remember that from Top Gear, seeing that on Top Gear the other week. It brought it all back.
Good track record then. Yes. Owning Robin Reliance.
Look, we see a lot of those on the roads nowadays as well.
Yeah, but Reliant was quite, in its day, was a successful thing. But yeah,
he started off as a funeral company, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
Something weird like that.
Yeah.
And then we're
blocked from my mind.
Yeah. It was really funny. When I was speaking out in Poland recently, I was asked for some interesting fact, you know, to introduce you with. And I realised that I had one boss that was sent to jail for, what was it, VAT, dodgy VAT-ness. Uh-huh. There was another one, this is all at Town Pages, another one who died from stress, didn't he?
Robert. He was all right.
He was good. He was good. Another one that when he was forced out, left smelly cheese under the roof tiles of his office. That's what Andrew Linskegs did. He probably shouldn't have said his name. I'll get sued now.
He's a regular listener. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you can bet he Googles his name. He's definitely the type that would do that, says I. So, yeah, it was an interesting time there. But so you went off then and worked with another kiosk company, didn't you, afterwards?
I did, for my sins. Yeah. I went off and,
And then some said you ended up as a teacher.
And then, yes, I retrained a few years ago, probably about 6 years ago.
Right.
And, because I'd had my children and they were at school and it was all that sort of thing, that I thought it would be a career that would partly fit in around the kids and that side of things. But it was actually partly because I did my degree in design and technology and I'd never really used it.
Right.
So I kind of thought, this looks really good, did lots of research into it, and you were guaranteed a job. You know, they sort of said, if you do the training, you get paid to do the training, and you'll be pretty much guaranteed a job in teaching.
I sense a butt coming.
Well, there were jobs, but you had to be prepared to go anywhere in the country.
Right.
And when you've got your kids already settled at a school in a nice area and quite a good schools, there's a limit to how far you're prepared to travel.
Yeah.
For something that, you know, isn't really going to sort of sustain you financially. So there were lots of reasons. But it was a challenge.
I think you described coming to Headscape as a chance to have a rest. and clients were going to be easy after kids.
Surely dealing with difficult children, is perfect for working at Headscape.
Perfect experience. on all levels.
Transferable skills, is what I like to call it.
So when you were at Town Pages, you were a project manager or producer, we called them back then, didn't we?
We did, yes.
Which was a project manager kind of with a bit of extra, very similar to what a project manager is today. It's just we use slightly different terminology.
They still use producers at the BBC.
I like it as a term. I prefer it in some ways to project manager. Just simply doesn't sound so dull.
I think producer, I believe, this is my interpretation of the term, is that you're more involved in content production as well as running projects.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there's more sort of scoping it as well, whereas I think project management is a bit more, it's already been scoped for you and you have to deliver it.
Which, to be honest, in our case, in the way that projects tend to work for us, a producer is probably a better title, considering what you do most of the time. Or I don't know. Do you? I don't know.
I do less of the, I mean, the statement of work is already written and that's already agreed. So to me, that's the bit of a producer's role that you probably don't do, that I don't do.
Yeah. Give it time.
I'd be quite happy to do it at some point.
You do a lot of work using CMSs and inputting content and all that kind of thing. I wouldn't have said that was a traditional project manager role.
No, and I think particularly in this role, it's not just, it's not spreadsheets at all anyway, but it's not just the sort of task management. There are other aspects to it that you have to be sort of quite flexible and willing to muck in and try different things, different parts of what you might consider would be a different role in a larger organisation.
We're a small team and Everybody needs to do a bit of this and a bit of that. That's the way it is.
We've stumbled into a highly controversial area, the whole area of what title you go with, because...
Does it matter?
No, I don't think it does.
Like, I always kind of think it's a title at the end of the day.
It seems to be the current trend is towards digital project management.
Oh, I see. That specific title.
Rather than... I don't know, rather than anything else.
Rather than the producer.
I think, basically, Brett and Sam, who we've had on the show the last couple of weeks, I think they got together and had a meeting and decided for the rest of the industry. they run conferences about this kind of thing, so they called them DPM, Digital Project Management, so that's kind of what stuck. Well, but I like producer.
Yeah, but then... as opposed to a project manager in a different industry, like, for example, building.
Yes.
In which case you would be called a project manager.
Yes.
Yeah, so it does differentiate between an industry, doesn't it, and a sector, but it doesn't...
It does, but then I think people know what a project manager is and they know what to expect.
Yeah.
And they might not with a producer, but you could soon tell them.
Very true. So what are you working on at the moment, Emma, work-wise? What projects you got in the go?
She's just twiddling her thumbs.
Twiddling her thumbs, not much. I bet the day that Emma arrived, you just kind of vomited projects on her, didn't you?
Well, no, actually, Chris Scott went on holiday. Which is quite a good move.
I'm the good one. Again.
That's superb. I can't believe he did that. So, yeah, what are you working on at the minute?
What am I working on in a minute? We're at various stages with different projects. Mm-hmm. We've Frontier Economics. We've just done a big redesign for them.
Oh, really?
That went live last week, and we've still got another not a language rollout, but another territory rollout to do for them. We've got voluntary services overseas, VSO. Mm-hmm. That's quite close to going live, but there's still quite a lot to do on that.
It's always that last 20% that takes 80% of the time.
It's that last 10% of a project, but it's about 210% of the effort. That's ever been any different. So we've got that one. We've got
Buckley Sandler.
Law firm
in Washington, which are great clients. And we've got Global Kids Online, haven't we?
You're busy at the moment.
Which is London School of Economics, got a project going on for them. That's gone really nicely. And that's coming up to going live. What's the other ones? There are others. Hang on.
It's all right. It wasn't meant to be a test. You have to get every client.
The other one is HESA. I have to mention HESA as well.
Who are they? I haven't heard of those.
They are the most exciting
client name.
Are you being rude?
Ever heard?
Are you being rude about?
Tell I don't work on this project.
Well, can you not guess from the?
No.
Okay. Higher Education Statistics Agency.
Oh, I want to work on that project so badly.
I tell you what, Paul, it's a lovely project.
Is it really?
It is a really lovely
client.
Project.
Nice.
They're a very nice client, and they've done things in the right order. So, for example, they have done their rebranding. I surely shouldn't say this, but they've done their rebranding and it's really, really nice. And they've done that before they got involved. Yeah. So they did do things in the right order.
I like a client that's a friendly, nice person and gets it as well. The combination of the two seems to be very rare, but makes a huge difference, doesn't it, on projects? Sounds like you're really busy then.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So when are you booked up till... Augusty time?
Yeah, I think we could probably start taking new stuff on. Yeah, I think Chris said the end of July for a proposal.
That's not too bad then.
But we couldn't take on lots of stuff around then.
No,
but you know what it's like. You start to sort of thinking, we probably should be starting to get something new in soon. So yeah, anyone's got any projects out there?
Why not, Marcus? You don't get to push Headscape very much on this show, especially now I've buggered off. You know, it's all about me. And what I want. Go on. So end of July, new projects.
Something kind of...
What do you want? Well, go on, tell the audience, demand a certain type of project you want to do.
Last summer, Ed and I worked on a project for National Parks UK.
Right.
Which was very kind of...
That sounds a nice project.
Visually appealing, aesthetic, kind of redesign type project where we spent... many days up in the Lake District working with the client. So that's the project.
You want another one of those, please?
Yes.
In the Maldives.
In the Maldives. You don't want a lot, do you? You just come back from Washington, the two of you, Mike, didn't you? You had a trip to DC. Yes. That's quite nice. You went on a Segway tour, didn't you?
We did a Segway tour on a Sunday because we flew out Saturday, had a Sunday to kind of acclimatise and then a full week working. Yes.
That's fairly intense, you doing, because we did it before, didn't we, years back.
Yeah.
We went out to the States and we did 4 days, was it?
We did three with EDF and three with Dick's Day.
That was knackering. Yeah, and we did five.
But the final day was kind of like there if we needed it.
Right,
it was kind
of
four, but as I mentioned to you before, we really needed six. Yeah. But, you know, that's you live and learn.
Yeah.
But really good. We got so much done. The difference, and this way of working kind of started with the National Parks Project.
Right.
We kind of, because they're right at the other end of the UK, it was kind of, well, we're not going to go for a day.
No.
Well, should we go overnight? And then it'd be like, well, then we'll be just planning to go home all the next day. Let's go and stay three nights and do 3 full days and see what happens. And what came out of that was, rather than just going and grabbing a load of inputs, tell us as much as you possibly can about this, 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 and this, and then we'll go away.
Yeah.
We actually got in starting doing the work.
Which is great.
And then you can start discussing it face to face
with the client,
and then we could tweak that, and then an hour later you've got something else to look at. So that was the purpose of trying to do kind of a more in-depth session at the start.
But I love that. When you get to sit side by side with the client over a period of time, so much more gets done, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you get the buy-in, don't you? You get them on board. I think that's one of the most important things about
absolutely.
It. No, it does make a big difference. Yeah.
Cool.
Still selling Headscape.
Oh, I thought we moved on. Dear listener, I apologise for opening Pandora's box. Carry on, Marcus.
No, I'll stop now and I'll save something up for next week. We always, particularly with kind of a CMS-based project where there's a lot of content needs to be shoved in. And
I love the terminology, like Marcus. That.
But as we were talking about this, kind of last 10% is always really get the client in, get them around this table we're sat around and spend a whole day just going bam, 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 bam.
Nice.
Through the list, rather than sending them a list of stuff.
What
do you think about this? Just literally sitting next to each other and getting...
That isn't selling Headscape. That's just good advice. I think
work for Headscape, that's how we work.
So basically, what you're saying is,
work with Headscape.
If you work with Headscape, you have to come and work really hard in preference to just swanning around
for
a bit.
That's actually true.
Yeah, so we've actually undermined the whole selling. But you'll get ice buns? I don't know.
We do cakes. Don't we do coffee, tea cakes,
and lunch usually.
Oh, yes. Lunch, my word. What extravagance. Anyway, enough of such things. So as we've said, this season of the podcast is really all about answering those digital management issues, some of which we've already kind of stumbled into as these things work out. We're always looking for more questions, which you can send to us at boag.world/questions, and there's a comment section on that page, so go ahead and post your comments and questions there and we'll pick them up and use them on the show. As is always with these things, you've got a pretty good chance of getting your question answered, because we never get enough questions. It's always the way. It's like people don't love us, don't want to interact with us, but there you go. All right, let's move on quickly to a sponsor and then we'll actually do some of the questions, which will be good. Our first sponsor of the week is InVision, which is an amazing set of prototyping and design tools. You guys have been using InVision in the last couple of weeks?
We have. Yes. I actually don't like to sync that up.
It was that bad, was it?
I mentioned it in the last show, didn't I?
You were going to say how you got on with it.
Yes, I was. We ended up not being able to use it because of a client requirement that they don't currently cater for, which is the idea of, because you have kind of the team that can work on stuff together.
Yeah, yeah.
You also have reviewers. And we needed to be able to send out some design work for reviewers to review, but it was imperative that their comments couldn't be seen by each other, because very powerful people who would likely lead each other.
Yeah. Right, so if the big boss says this is terrible, everybody else would just agree.
Exactly that. So it was a case of we can't use it because of that purity. And I let them know, and they said, thanks for your feedback, we'll put it on our list of
that's cool
features.
But what did you think of the rest of it? Good app?
Beautiful.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Really good, actually. Right. I was very impressed.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. From the horse's mouth. And they don't get paid. Only I do. So, so I mean, we've talked about what an amazing prototype tool it is. We talked about, and I was pushing on the guys here at Headscape, actually, Craft, which is their free plugin for Sketch and Photoshop that we talked about last week, I think. But it's also, it's really very much a kind of go-to tool for a whole range of amazing companies. So this isn't just a tool that sad little agencies like Headscape use. This is a tool that the big boys use. People like MailChimp, Twitter, Netflix, Uber, Evernote, LinkedIn, Salesforce, Shopify, Adobe, Sony, Nike all use this as a prototyping tool. And to be honest, I can see why it is pretty good. But it's really good if you're an agency as well. So definitely check it out. You can have a 3 months free trial of using all of their prototyping tools, all their mobile user testing tools, all the rest of the stuff by going to boag.world/invision and entering the code INV-BOAG. So there we go. All right, let's move on to our questions before I pass out. It's so hot in here.
It's so hot.
I'm not complaining.
It's so hot. It does get too hot in here. It's because we're recording, we have to shut the window and the door.
Yeah, which is not good.
A little sauna.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to ignore it.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of dripping. It's very attractive.
No drink.
Aww. I weep for you, Marcus. So, we got some questions. As Emma has already said, she wasn't looking forward to this. So what we've done is selected the softest, nicest question, I think, in the world to start with, which is we're going to talk about, it's a question from Matt, and he's asking what the key skills are to be a good project manager, because I think it's an area he wants to get involved in. So I thought we'd take a few minutes to talk about what makes a great project manager. And as you are a great project manager, just talk about yourself for a little bit. It's easy, isn't it?
So the question was, what skills
make you a good project manager?
Brevity.
And moving on, question two, Paul.
That is genius. Genius, Emma. I'm very impressed.
No, I just wanted to see your reaction. Actually, there is a certain amount of truth in it.
Well, yeah.
You know, there is. I mean, it's not the main one, obviously, but it is... You do, you know, meetings go on and being able to sum up and be concise about things is, I think, quite a key skill to the role.
Because it was interesting that me and Marcus were chatting over lunch, and he was talking about when you went out to the States recently and how you kind of divided and conquered.
Yeah.
And there was you and Marcus in one meeting, mm-hmm. and there was a designer, a front-end coder and a back-end coder in the other, running the other session.
Yes.
And they are incredibly talented people at what they do, but they did struggle to keep the meetings on track. So that...
Well,
kind of,
I'm saying yes. They'll probably go, no, they didn't at all.
I think Lee would be the first person to say, we needed you in there to bully people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, I've done quite a lot of that in schools.
Yes.
with probably some of the toughest audiences. And you do learn how to control. I mean, that was one thing, having taught, you do learn there are certain skills. I'm sure you do it actually with an audience as well, that you, there are certain things that you can do to make sure that everybody is still on track.
Yeah.
And you know, you can do it in quite a nice way, but you can sort of, you'll go, I know you go kind of like, oh, back in the room, you know, that's one of the things that you will say, but there are certain things that you can do. And I think when you're, you know, in fairness to Lee, in terms of what he was trying to do and do all the design side of it, it's quite
difficult.
A lot to do all of that and actually keep everybody in check, on task, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, but that's a different kind of skill. I mean, it's like a lot of project managers would possibly think they would never have to do that particular aspect of a role.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like not a lot of project managers might just want to be behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Never have to run a workshop, never have to do that aspect of it.
Yeah,
but to me, I quite like that bit because I think you get the feedback from the client and you get the rapport with them in a way.
Yeah, I think it's increasingly quite an important skill as well, especially as like a lot of organizations are working in a more agile manner, which means that the project manager often ends up being the scrum master, and the scrum master is all about keeping things on track. So it is a kind of necessary part of the job, I think, these days.
Yeah, I think it depends on the size of the organisation, how the teams are set up, that sort of thing. I mean, at Headscape, it is a small environment. It's a small working environment. And so you naturally have to be more agile by nature, because in a bigger organisation, you can have more, let's say, dead wood.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can get away with doing less. It's going to be really apparent if you're in a smaller agency and things aren't happening.
There's always the other thing that I find really interesting about project managers, and is the one skill that I don't have. Well, I have many skills that I don't have when it comes to project management, but one that springs to mind is that getting that balance between being a bit of a bully, because you do have to bully, but still being likable. Because if people don't like the project manager, things go bad.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, if I said there are two things, it's actually, say, for example, when I went into teaching, there were two things. You need to be a little bit of enthusiasm, goes an awfully long way. But the second thing is you have to be really resilient.
Yeah.
And I think if you've got those two things, it will stand you in really good stead. Mm. And it is that whole thing of actually trying to remain likeable, if you like, because actually when I joined here, okay, there's the old guard, if you want, but then there's the newer people, and I guess one of my main concerns is that they might want to leave genuinely. It's kind of who is this clown they've brought in? She knows nothing. And they might all want to sort of think, oh, do you know what, this is the time to
go.
I mean, fortunately that hasn't happened yet. And yeah, hopefully it won't, but you know, it is that thing, and I do think those are skills that you need.
And there's also that, there's the other one that gets me. I was listening to them earlier, you were asking the guys a question, and it's obviously something the client had come to you wanting to know something. I won't say too much because it doesn't reflect brilliantly on people, this one. But there was this kind of, okay, so you've been given a question. They obviously just did not want to deal with it, right? They saw it as outside of the project scope, nothing to do with them. And they were kind of grumbling, as people do, you know. And just the way you remained completely calm about that, it was like water off a duck's back. I think that kind of patience and slightly emotionally removed from what you're doing is quite important too, because that wound me up even just hearing it, and I wasn't
I have to say, that's one thing, is that I never take it personally.
No.
And it's just, that is one thing, if you walk into a, you know, I hate to go back to the whole thing of the teenagers, say all sorts of things to you. And you know, you cannot be that person who takes it away and takes it personally. And it's the same in the work environment. It's very rare that I really sort of take anything personally.
They weren't being rude. It was just they were grumbling. They didn't want to do it.
Yeah, like kids.
Yeah. fair comment.
I think it's kind of, you know, I mean, that partly comes down to experience as well, as to, you know, sometimes I think, well, perhaps I should know more. Perhaps I should, you know, be able to field those kind of questions a little bit better. But actually, I think it's something that probably something we need to work on as a company, is to just make the time for those kind of annoying type questions that can really eat into somebody's time.
Yeah.
But actually, if you had like half an hour, you know, or an hour once a week where you went through ding, 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 then you could actually tick all those things off without somebody losing concentration, when in fact they probably sit there for 4 hours tackling a much more meatier task.
I mean, we have fixed day, but then fixed day gets killed when too many projects start.
Are in.
But that is quite, we could have annoying question hour.
You're allowed
to ask questions between I don't know, 2 and 3.
Well, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week, where I was going, I hate being interrupted. And I know that if Emma had asked me that question that she asked Dan and Chris earlier, I would have reacted like Dan and Chris.
Like,
you know, it's an interruption. I've got other stuff to do. It's a stupid ass question. I've got no time for it whatsoever. So I would have reacted in the same way. So I just find it really interesting because, you know, those kinds of questions do matter. They're part of the service.
But the other side of it is that I know that I have to get back to the client.
Yeah.
And if I don't get back to the client, that reflects badly on all of us. So in that sense, I am prepared to use my pester tokens. That's what I call them. I have my pester tokens.
Yeah.
And I know when I've overstepped the mark normally, because I would get snapped at. But, you know, that's because they're busy people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think having quite a tough skin and not taking things the wrong way is probably quite key.
But it's having, but it's having that tough skin while at the same time still being aware. Because you get some people, I know some people, who have very tough skin and as a result are oblivious to when they've pissed someone off. So you've still got to be kind of aware of people's emotional states. So it's a difficult balance, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's actually, you know, going back to the whole teaching thing, empathise. You have to empathise, but, you know, partly with your client, but also with the people that you work with.
Yeah.
And you recognise that they've got, you know, a heavy workload. And so empathy is kind of the other skill.
Is there anything else that springs to mind skill-wise? I'm sitting here trying to think as well. Marcus, you wouldn't know because you hate project
management. Lists.
Lists.
Actually, a good listener. I would always say you have to be a good listener.
I was leading somewhere there. I was actually meant you need to be very thorough, and that's making lists and taking notes and all that kind of thing, and not leave stones unturned and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there is. That's a really good one. That thing of, you know, a lot of people have got that let sleeping dogs lie. I'm not going to raise that issue. Well, I think project managers have to turn over the stones and find out what's underneath, because otherwise it's going to come back and bite
you on the bum.
I really mixed my metaphors there. There was about three or four all in one go there, but you get the idea.
It will do. Yeah. I mean, you do have to be prepared to ask ugly questions sometimes, you know, and
I think a lot of people, myself included, are guilty of going, you know, meeting situation, we've agreed a load of things, and one of them you weren't sure about.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. good project managers keep going back over. Right, does everybody understand?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But actually, that brings me on to another thing, is actually being prepared to stick your hand up and ask the daft question.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can, it's like you can sit anywhere, you can sit in the meeting room and you really don't understand.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people have talked and they voiced their opinions, and at the end of it, you come away and you think, but I really don't know what I'm supposed to have concluded from all of this. I don't know what the question was, and I certainly don't know what the answer is. So actually being the person to stick their hand up and say, do you know what, or can I just clarify it? And you can do it in certain ways where you don't look too much like an idiot. And it's the same as in the classroom.
Mm.
You know, that you'll probably find that five other people that will stick their hand up and say, do you know what, I don't know either.
No. And I think you're right, it is massively important. And I think it's something that comes with age and experience, that one. Because I remember when I was younger, I would keep my mouth shut because I didn't want to look stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
But you kind of reach a point where you think, screw it.
But that has changed, I think, with kids nowadays. And I think that having done the teaching, you know, kids will ask you all the time.
Really?
And that's the other side of it, is that they will just keep saying, I don't understand. I don't understand. And that's the other side of it,
right,
is that, I know, but you haven't made any effort.
You
made some effort.
You'd understand.
You would understand.
Mm. Yes.
So it's a
little
bit.
You say that a lot to clients?
No, I rarely have to. I think that's a big difference in the two industries.
Right. Anything more on that, or should we move on to the next question? I've no idea how long we're going. You're going to have to keep it under control this week.
I'm not sure.
You should have given that job to me. I'd have done it.
You'd have had a table.
But you've got 5 minutes.
Okay, all right, get on to the next question. Don't hassle me. Right, okay, the next question is from Daryl Snow. In fact, the next two questions are. Daryl has been posting some good questions, so we're going to use them. The first one is, when moving from a production role to a managerial role, how do you let go of delegating tasks to people who you know can't do as good a job as you could do if you did it yourself? And what if you don't have time to train them? Now, Emma, you seem a bit worried about Daryl's mental health here. What's your concern with that question?
So he said he hasn't got the time, first of all.
He hasn't got the time to teach people to do the job. And he's also saying that they can't do it as well as him.
He can.
Either he's got some kind of narcissistic complex. No offence, Daryl. I'm sorry, mate. or they really can do it as well, and which, to be honest, is more likely, because if he's the more experienced person, there will be people in his team that aren't as experienced as him.
And it's difficult to, without really sort of knowing what the task is and everything. But, I mean, I would generally say that, you know, if you've got those kind of concerns, that then it's how you ask somebody, isn't it? Or you can do it in a nice way. You can sort of say, well, do you know what? I would do it like this.
Yeah.
Yes, you have to make the time to show that person how you might do that particular job.
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes you've got to let people do things their own way, because we all work differently. And it's not necessarily that they are... I mean, it's difficult without knowing, but it might just be that they do things differently.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, in his mind, it's not the way he would do it.
Yeah.
But you have to accept that people work in different ways, and they might come up, you know, maybe with a different solution, or they might come up with the same solution, but they go about it completely differently. It's not necessarily wrong.
I mean, he's kind of got, he's caught himself in a catch-22, because he's saying, I don't have time to train people, but it... If he doesn't train people, they're never going to be as good at him.
Okay.
And if he doesn't delegate, they're never going to...
Yeah, okay, so...
He's never going to have time to train.
If he is delegate. The manager of this person now, I would say if he's going to be a good manager, he has to make the time to train that person and monitor their progress, make sure they're happy. Or, to be honest, you know, there's something wrong there. Either his workload is wrong and you haven't got enough time to do the job properly, or you need to get a bit faster at doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but one way, you need to make the time.
Yeah. It sounds to me like he's in one of these scenarios, which is very common, where you have digital teams where the manager of that team is actually doing day-to-day production work as well as trying to manage product. And that is a really tricky situation to be in. And they're under-resourcing the team, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And but you have to recognise that there is something wrong.
Yeah.
Either you haven't got enough resource...
Yes.
Or you need to make the time to train your resource up.
Yeah.
So you need to sort of address it one way or another.
Yeah. And the truth is, Daryl, that, you know...
You shouldn't be working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to get the job done.
No.
You know, so he probably needs to flag it to one of his managers and say, you know...
Yeah.
I've got this, that and the other. I can probably sort it out, but I need this amount of time.
Or accept that the quality is going to go down, that you're delegating it out to people, and that for a period of time, while they teach themselves, in effect, the quality will drop. Yeah. And, you know, but hopefully, with the old pointer from you here and there, over time, it goes back up. I mean, I felt like that when I first stopped at Headscape. I stopped designing as much and started, you know, we started taking on designers. I remember feeling like this. I remember feeling, because I was still doing some design, and I'd look at their designs and go, oh, really, that's not good enough. Some of that was what you just said, that they just had a different style and a different approach to me, and actually it was good enough, it just wasn't my personal taste. And that's a huge thing to get your head around. But some of it was that they just weren't as experienced as me. And so all we did is made sure that, you know, the more experienced projects, or the projects where quality mattered a lot more, that would be me, and the stuff that was less important that they would do. And over time, their skills went up, and now you look at, you know, people like, you know, Lee and Chris, who would have been the people that came in at the time, and their work's far better than mine ever was, even when I did actually know how to do design.
Yeah, I think in Daryl's case, there needs to be, or needed to be, a kind of handover period.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
Yeah.
And then you can work out processes. Because I'm not sure from the question, but it sounds like the work that's going to be done by the new people who are taking over his old role will be coming to him to kind of review. So if you had just like a couple of weeks working next to each other, that would get around
that. That's the key. I mean, that would be another great thing, is if these two people were working side by side.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to look over people's shoulder and said, oh, why on earth did you do that? Or, you know, probably something a little bit more constructive.
Oh, I was going to say, you don't say that.
This is why.
You do not say that. You say,
oh, my word, that's terrible.
Again. Daryl, don't listen to Paul.
Brilliant.
Oh, Oh dear, you know what I meant. Oh, that's an interesting. No, I can't. I'm useless at it. Whatever I say sounds bad. Yeah. So I mean, certainly working side by side makes a big difference as well, doesn't it? In that kind of situation. The other thing that worried me a bit is this thing about not having time to train them, because that's a big concern. I mean, in our industry, training is such an important part of the equation, isn't it?
Yeah, and also I think you've got to think, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, is that, you know, if people are on holiday or, you know, they're going away, there's a lot to be said for having those crossover skills, isn't there?
Yeah.
So that you can hand over to somebody else. So although it's got, you know, probably feels that you're really having to make the time and it's a bit rushed and all the rest of it, there's a huge, you know, longer term benefit by investing your time in training those people to cover those times when people are sick or, you know, they're on holiday and all those things. So you're kind of like building in a bit of contingency, really, for the future.
And I mean, it's not even just a project management issue. That's a critical business weakness.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I was working with a client recently, and in their team, they only had one front end developer, one person that knew how to do the website, and they left.
Yeah.
And they had literally no one that knew how to put anything on the website or do anything, because they, you know, there was a critical weakness there. And that's just bad, you know, bad planning, isn't it, really? You need that redundancy.
Yeah, I think what this really comes down to, because I hadn't been thinking about this question at all, but I think it's about Daryl speaking to his new boss and saying, there's going to be a problem here if you don't let me have some time to...
And actually, isn't that a good manager?
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's actually looking not just at the next 1-2 weeks, but is looking a little bit further down the line and saying, well, do you know what? This could be a big problem that you're sort of storing up. And in fact, you can turn it into a huge positive by investing in some training. Either we do it in-house or some of it maybe we could do out of house. But, you know, it is something that it probably needs to flag. You know, and perhaps that is part of the transition between doing the production tasks and being a good line manager.
Okay. All right, then, Daryl, are you listening? Right. Okay, Daryl, the next bit, right, I'm about to say, this is for your manager, right? So you can copy it out of the podcast and you can play it to your manager. Hello, Mr. Manager. My name is Paul Boag. I'm a user experience consultant and digital transformation expert. I work around the world, have written 4 books, and I'm an expert in my field. I'm telling you here and now, you're not investing enough time in your staff, and things are going to go horribly wrong if you don't pull your socks up, get your act together, and allow some time for your staff to be trained properly. I'm encouraged to also tell you that there are a range of excellent companies out there that provide training services, including Headscape Limited. Thanks for listening. There you go, Daryl. So just play that to your manager and everything will be great.
Yeah,
how's that sound?
Believe that you believe anything.
Right, let's do our final question for today, which is also from Daryl. So we are worried about you, Daryl. If you need help, reach out to me on Twitter. We're here for you, mate. We're here for you. Right, Daryl. Daryl writes, how do we structure a production team to support continuous delivery? I.e., you might have your team split into designers, developers and testers. With some, I think what he's worried about is some people sitting idly waiting for others to hurriedly complete a task. So he's looking at kind of task management issues in continual development, which I think is a very fair question. You know, Headscape has to deal with these kinds of problems. How do you guys deal with it?
That's why I thought I'd let Emma have that question. It's tough, is the honest answer. Because sometimes, you know, because you can't say, oh, we've got to make sure you've got the right number of resources for this task and the right number of resources for design and all this kind of thing. Because it changes all the time.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on it. I'm serious. Just communicate. Keep communicating. Somebody looks like somebody's going to be, their task is going to be running out soon. So can they help out with something else? As you were saying before, Emma, it helps if you can kind of turn your hand to something else. You mentioned it for somebody going on holiday, but actually, it's if your usual tasks run out, you can kind of dive in and help other people out.
But again, it's about the whole thing about sort of cross training somebody in the sense that if there is a new skill they're picking up, you know, it's like an ideal opportunity, isn't it, to train them in another area. Do you know what? You're a bit light on testing at the moment. It's not going to come your way for a while. Why don't you come and help with...
Whatever. Yeah. So actually...
And in fact, you might be able to prevent some of the, you know, the problems that might... build up further down the line.
It's almost like the second question answers the first. You'd have time for people to do training in their downtime.
On the job training, there you go.
And that goes, going back to that first question, is this presumption that it's Daryl that has to be doing the training, but there are loads of training resources out there. There's loads of places you can learn new skills, and staff should be training one another as well.
But actually, it can just be that. Do you know what? Why don't you go and sit next to this person for the day?
Shadow them.
You know, go and shadow them. You know, is that all right? Make it quite informal.
Yeah.
And they probably... learn a lot more through
and it also makes people a lot more tolerant working with one another. If as a designer you understand how the underlying code works, you tend to be a bit more sympathetic, and vice versa, you know, which is always a big thing, I think. But I'm wondering whether Daryl in this question is actually, he talks about continuous development, but I wonder whether he's actually also talking about agile, because this problem of designers, developers and testers all working on the same sprint at the same time can be problematic when a sprint involves more development work and less design work and that kind of thing.
Yeah, because you have to have those members of the team, don't you?
Yeah.
And they have to be dedicated to it for the 1 week, 2 week, whatever.
Yeah.
For however long you're...
So that's a tricky one. And I've often asked that question because we don't use Agile in that way here. You know, we pick and choose a bit from it, unless things have changed. I don't know since I've gone back.
I guess we've done some agile, some kind of strict agile with, or strict, semi-strict with VSO and the University of Hull, but generally we still do mostly waterfall.
Yeah. So I've asked this because this has been a concern of mine of you know, this idea that you could have some sprints that are very heavy, etc. And I think it's also particularly problematic when you're looking from a design point of view, because design is often very holistic. It's very hard to look at an individual kind of work silo, you know, without looking at the kind of whole overall as well. And that the kind of feedback I've got over that one has been a bit woolly around the edges. It feels a bit bodgy in places.
Well, the fact that we're talking about we take bits of Agile that work for us suggests that it is maybe a little bit too rigid.
Yeah.
And that if you've got a very rigid way of working, then you're going to have holes in it like that.
Yeah.
No, every project's different.
Yeah. I mean, one of the solutions to this problem is that actually the designers work a sprint ahead.
Mm.
So, you know, they're working on one sprint while the developers are working on another. But then that feels quite waterfall-y, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's like short waterfall.
Yes. the other thing that I propose myself, which works quite well, is the idea of instead of producing, and I think Headscape do this quite a lot, instead of doing, say, one section at a time or one piece of functionality in a series of sprints, that you actually work through fidelity. So you start off with a very rough wireframe and then you're kind of layering fidelity and more detail as you go down, because that tends to even out the workload a little bit more across the different people.
Yeah, and also because if unless you work Agile strictly all the time, you kind of do need, because you've only got one thing you're working on.
Yeah.
But for an agency, we've got, as you've heard, lots of projects that are all at different places within them. You need to be able to have people free.
Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, Dan's going to work on this project for the next 3 weeks.
Mm.
And if we were strictly, strictly agile, then he'd have to be on the project he was on.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
He wouldn't be free for those.
Of course, the downside of that is, you know, as a designer or a developer, you can feel like you're pinging from one project to the next the whole time.
Yeah, I think you've got to be careful, but you shouldn't be doing, like, the mornings and the afternoons on different projects.
How do you deal with that? From a Headscape point of view these days?
Well, what I was going to say is that, to be honest, something that's worked quite well recently is if you separate out the design process side of it, right, and the development back end, you can actually do quite a lot of the development on the back end, so long as you've got quite an understanding client that doesn't expect it all to appear looking all beautiful and lovely on the front end.
Okay.
So in fact, you can structure things. It makes your back end developer feel a little bit more comfortable because they feel they've got the building blocks in places for the project.
Yeah.
You can get a lot of the content in there.
Yeah.
And in fact, from a client's point of view, it works really well, because then when it does come to the CMS, they've got a much better understanding of what it is that they're looking at, what they've got to build. And it's not just, you know what, we've spent all these 3 months looking at the lovely pictures and designs, and oh my goodness, I've only got 2 weeks
to fill in all the content.
And I've got loads of questions. So actually doing it that way, so that you do a certain amount of the back end development, and then sometimes it stops.
Yeah.
But it depends on the project. So for example, if I take HESA as an example, there's a lot of technical development there.
Yeah.
So a lot of that has happened up front.
Mm-hmm.
And the design, if you want, is actually behind.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter, because it will, you know, at one point,
Dan
is going to get the messy bit where he has to sort of make
join the two.
So he and Ian between them will have to join the two up. But I think it works quite well, because it takes, I think, you know, as a project manager, I'm always concerned about the person at the end of the line, and that is always your back end developer.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always, I was sort of think, you know, with going back to whoever was looking for the project management role, I think if you sort of put yourself in their shoes and try and look after their workload, then you will find it a little bit easier to try and manage it. So anything you can get done up front for those, you know, the technical people, get any of those things squared away, so much the better.
That's my code for 50 minutes, Paul.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. How is it? Marcus just raised his hand, and I had no idea.
I thought it was a random high five.
Hey.
I thought he wanted to say something profound.
No,
there
no,
we go.
Not at all.
I mean, what you're essentially talking about, we need to wrap up then, as we're at 50 minutes, but what you're essentially talking about is decoupling dependencies wherever possible.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because if you can decouple those dependencies, then people can work almost at their own rate.
Yeah.
You know, and so you don't have one person waiting around for another.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Mate, do that. Do that, Daryl.
Well, it's logical, isn't it? Really.
Do that. Use the spare time for training. We've answered both your questions. It's all great. Great. I bet he's really happy. I bet we just solved...
Especially with the bit you gave him to play to his manager.
Yeah.
I reckon he'll be delighted with that.
We've just solved all his work problems in one slot. So, good for you. Right, let's do a second sponsor, which is Resource Guru, talking about project management. This is a cloud-based team calendar with a really simple drag-and-drop interface. It's fast, and it's a simple way to schedule people or equipment or other resources online. You can see the whole big picture at one go. Who's busy? Who's available, Daryl, for your training that you're going to be doing? And who's off work? How dare they have holiday? That's just rude of them. You can also add custom fields to the resources to filter in different ways. So, for example, you might want to say, just show me designers that have got skills in this particular area, or back-end developers that can do X, Y, or whatever else. You can also filter people by department or location, or only show me permanent members of staff because I don't want to be paying for my freelancers. So those are custom fields you can set up to be any way that you want, basically. It makes it easy to do things like manage time off requests, and because you don't have to track them in a separate calendar. It's all together in one place, so which is so useful, because you get some applications where you're kind of dealing with holiday allowance, so people are taking time off over here, and you're trying to deal with you know, the work that's got to be done over here on another calendar, but it brings it all together in a nice place. So unlike other management software, it can be scheduled in one place. You can plan staff vacations so that they can you can see the impact of their absence on teams, project workload, and that kind of thing. There is a 30 days free trial, and it only takes a few seconds to sign up. Listeners of this show can use the coupon code BOAGWORLD when they subscribe to get an additional month free. That means that you've got essentially 2 months to give it a go, try it out with your business, and that's a good opportunity to see whether it's right for you. You could do that by going to resourceguru.io/BOAGWORLD. So that about wraps it up. We've got to do... Did you know that we do Marcus's joke? Have you heard about this?
I'm leaving the room now.
Stay still. You have to endure it too. And you have to pretend to laugh at the appropriate moment. Go, Marcus.
All right, this one's from Ian Lasky.
Oh, hello, Ian.
Hello, Ian. Yes, I haven't checked from him for a while. Will glass coffins be a success? Sorry,
see,
start
Kate,
again. It's too hot in here.
I'm about to pass out. Yeah.
Will glass coffins be a success?
Go on.
Remains to be seen.
Oh, no. That's so poor. Thank you. Thank you, Ian.
I like that one.
On your right
I
level,
like them
isn't
all.
He? Yeah. Well, you wouldn't pick them otherwise,
no,
one presumes.
Exactly, yeah.
So, just a reminder, send Marcus more questions, because there's no questions.
Yeah.
You do the questions, I'll do the jokes, right?
Yeah.
Send Marcus the jokes.
Yes, I could do some more, please.
At marcus@boagworld.com and send me your questions at paul@boagworld.com. That's about it. Thank you, Emma, for doing this. I know you didn't particularly enjoy it, but...
So it was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another top skill, be a good liar.
next week we're going to be joined by Chris Gollop. Do you reckon it's Gollop?
I'm sorry, I'm not looking at your notes.
But... Oh, she just... So...
Chris will do.
Chris is joining us. Now, I don't know Chris.
No.
He just wrote in, said he wanted to be on the show. Marcus is convinced that Chris is just going to come on the show and spout obscenities the entire time. So... I'm hoping that this will work out. I'm sure
he'll
he's a lovely person.
He'll be the best
person.
Guest in the world
he
after
will,
Emma.
After Emma, obviously, yeah. So, yeah. So if you fancy being a guest on the show, Mr. Psychopath, listening to this...
What are you saying?
Drop me an email at paul@paragraph.com. Tell me a little bit about your background. We'd love to have you on. Presuming you know something about project management. Otherwise, probably not this season. But thank you, Emma, for joining us. Thank you, guys, for listening. And goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.